But the Leafs, Jets, and I think we touched on something in the last hour that we can expand on here with Ray, because he can take us into the Vancouver market. You know, living in Vancouver, being from Vancouver, just the heightened anxiety this season is going to have, because it's all Canadian all the time, and it's a shortened season anyway.
Think about playing Calgary, and your old goalie gets a shutout and was dominant, and you're a Vancouver fan. You got to be looking at that saying, why the hell didn't we sign him? Why, like, exactly. You know that chatter's going on in Vancouver. Half their old team from last year is on Calgary.
And Tanev was blocking shots left and right. Like, that's the thing.
Levo's playing on the top line with Monahan and Gaudreau. It's like, if you're a Van fan, you're like, what the hell's going on here?
Somebody in the stands the other night, but
he's getting his opportunities. Yeah. That's all that matters.
But point being is, you know what, though? It can change in a heartbeat. And you know, I thought Braden Holtby looked really good against Edmonton the first night. Even Demko was fantastic against the Oilers the second night. It's just Edmonton, their big boys showed up in that second night. Like, Demko was, that game could have been really, really ugly. But it's just, you know, when you're looking at it, I think Vancouver, they lost the most on paper for me. That's why I had them farther down. I had them not making the playoffs. I have to have full disclosure, because there's a chance they'll make the playoffs. JT Miller's playing tonight. That's a big boost. He was a fan.
That's
he was the best
me.
Player.
I thought he was out for 2 weeks. That was my understanding based on the reporting. But I saw that today. I'm like, wow, that's big.
Yeah.
And
it's good
timing. They're only a few games in, but it's the connection between markets. Where another thing, like you guys mentioned, when you go down to the States, you know, you go through California, you hit Arizona, St. Louis on the way back, come home. Your media is covering it, but you don't care about what the opposing media is saying, what they think, if they even exist.
Dude, sometimes they don't. When I played in Carolina, the visiting media wouldn't even come and check us out.
Right, exactly.
And even if you're in a big market, like the beat writer for L.A. doesn't necessarily want to. Hey, I want my readers to read up on Austin Matthews.
Doesn't care. Historically didn't care. You catered to your own market.
Right.
But if you're in Toronto, it's like, I don't know what they're talking about in New York or Chicago. I don't care. But up here, I know what they're talking about in Montreal. I know what they're talking about in Vancouver and Edmonton. And they definitely know what we're talking about in Toronto. So it's made a small division feel even smaller. It's like,
agreed.
You know, we're all in like on the same block.
Dude, what it is, Hayes, remember you talked about it last year, and L.A. was legendary at it. They went through their Canadian media tour. L.A. would come to Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and the whole time they'd be parading about Drew Doughty, and he's the Norris Trophy winner. Well, that's just the microcosm of what it is every single night with every team. You're just going to a different city, complaining about what's wrong and talking up the good stuff.
Yeah. Wow. And hearing about it.
Exactly, but go a step further. You're paying attention to what's going on in Vancouver because it can directly affect, you know, what the Leafs are going through in Montreal, like if somebody's out or whatever, because you're battling for them.
That all ties it together, but again, that just wouldn't apply anywhere else. Like, that's what makes the Canadian market so different. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. Ray, we were just kind of laughing about this, and listen, we can be leading the charge on this too, being irrational and emotional and yelling and screaming, but we're 5 days into the season, and I'm not sure the country's going to hold up. Like, they're freaking in Edmonton, they're freaking in Vancouver. TJ Brody's already a whipping boy here. It's crazy. 5 days in.
I got asked today, how concerned am I about Elias Pettersson's start?
Right. Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm like, I haven't even really thought of it, actually.
Yeah.
He had two games that didn't quite go very well, and now he gets JT Miller back today, and I'm less than concerned about that. But it's going to be the same everywhere. Jack Campbell, is the starting goaltender stuff started to overload yet?
Oh, it's around.
It's out there.
It's
it was
hovering.
Sniffing around until the announcement came. The one story, Ray, that I will say, if you're an Oilers fan, I don't think you're like over there, like you're panicking overly, but you kind of wouldn't you be thinking like, are these discussions really being had already at this point? Like, can't play defense, no attention to detail. We have goaltending problems. Like, we have two of the best players in the world, and we're a disaster when they're not on the ice. I think if you're a fan of the Oilers, you didn't really think this quickly you'd be having those kind of talks.
No, and I think you'd probably be at the point of, like, again,
Yeah.
Like, are we doing this again, the same conversation again? I found it really interesting that the two young guys are coming out of their lineup on the blue line. Ethan Bear, who had a really good rookie year, and Caleb Jones, they're coming out tonight, and Chris Russell's going in, and William Lagesson, who's a rookie, played a few games last year, but he's more of a defensive player. It's like, you know, Dave Tippett is just like, we got to lock this down, man. We got one goalie.
Yeah.
And he's getting 40 shots a night. Whether he's good, bad, or otherwise, this can't be. And so, you know, Edmonton's got their deal. I heard you guys talking about the Calgary-Vancouver thing. Not only in Vancouver are they, you know, a little bit up in arms that Markstrom went to, you know, is gone, and they got to, you know, and he gets a shutout, but they got to play him 10 times this year.
Right.
Yeah. There's only 56 games, and you're going to see Markstrom 9 of them.
Yeah.
Assuming he gets one off. And, you know, Noodles, you brought up Tanev. He was eating pucks like crazy blocks the other night.
I know. Like that, he flies under the radar. Like when he's healthy, yeah. He's a very solid defender. And that's what they were looking for, right? Is yeah. Obviously a replacement for Brody. He slides in there. He can play hard minutes. And kind of, to me, when he's at his best, you don't notice him that much. But then you're looking at the score sheet going, that guy was blocking shots left and right. The puck couldn't get to Markstrom because he was all over it. And it was impressive. Like, you know, that's something they targeted. And you know, again, it's one game.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, that's the beauty of it, and that comes back to what you were saying, Brian. Like, we're 5 days in, and it is overreaction Friday, overreaction Thursday, Monday, you name it, because team great, team stinks, you know, and it doesn't matter.
The whole country's watching. Everyone's got
exactly.
2 cents on it, and
yeah.
there's not as many games, you
yeah.
know, so they quite literally are more important. You know, like, it is still too early to make any sort of assessment on anything. But it's not like U.S. Thanksgiving. You know, it's not like, I'll give you 20
right.
games. You got about
right.
10. So you got like 6
thing,
or 7
Brian,
more.
Too. What do you think of this? Is like, not only is there, you know, urgency of the 56 games, but everything feels so urgent because each day is more lineup gymnastics everywhere. So it feels like, teams have to make these changes everywhere. And, well, the Leafs made 4 today, and the Jets have to make 3, and... Man, guys are going, you know, they've got people coming off the taxi squad, and one guy's going, like Romanoff got sent to the taxi squad in Montreal for a day to save some cash, and like it makes everything feel like it's frantic and out of control.
Ray, from what you saw the Leafs, you were in the house in Ottawa, which was their worst performance. But
yeah.
What do you think is going to be the thing on the fence where it's like, it may be similar to Edmonton? Jamie was talking about they kind of defend almost similar. But what is going to be, you know, the one factor where if they do this regularly, they're going to be an elite team, not just in the North, but the whole league. And if they don't, they're going to piss the season away.
For me, it's just, you know, how quickly can they defend and get out of their zone? Once they're
yeah.
over the blue line, I never even think about them because... Of course, they got that top end, which is so good.
They make things happen, man.
Man, right. They just make everybody scared to play. Like, who wants to be, I'm going to be really aggressive against Matthews. I'm going to try and not get burned. And then as soon as I give him more space, he crushes me, right? You're stuck trying to figure out a way to play against him. But I think it's, how quick can they defend and get out of their zone? And that's not... You know, Noodles, you would know from, you know, your Calgary days and stuff, but that's not necessarily Brody's great strength, and he's
yeah.
in their top four. You know, Hall and Muzzin are a solid pair, and then it's a question mark. So
yeah.
you've got, in my mind, you've got a defenseman in Brody that's not a quick stopper, and then you've got two guys at the bottom that whoever they are, whichever configuration they use, I don't know exactly what they are yet. So that's my concern when I watch them.
Well, my whole thing, and all I was saying is when I look at Edmonton, their habits have carried over from last year. And then I was looking at Toronto, and I'm like, yep, same type of thing. And I know habits take time to break. And it's the personnel has changed a little bit, but not from the core of both of these teams. And when I look at Toronto, if I'm pre-scouting them, where do you get to the Leafs? It's pressure on their D because sometimes the support is there, sometimes the support is not. So, you know, if I can get on that defensive core and force them to turn pucks over and force the Leafs to play in their own zone and defend, that's where, you know, that's how Montreal, I know the Leafs won that game, but I thought Montreal was the better team 5-on-5. The Leafs special teams won, obviously, and their top-end talent took over when needed to do. And also, Freddie made two big saves in overtime against Montreal. But 5-on-5, when you have to defend and you have to play with some structure, that's something that's still a work in progress for the Maple Leafs when I watch them. Ottawa, they played intense on Friday night. They played excited, and they didn't look afraid to make mistakes. And I thought that's how they got to Toronto. Saturday night, the Leafs, the details were very strong for the Leafs, and Ottawa looked scared to lose that game, and that's exactly what happened. The Leafs just dominated the Saturday night. But my whole thing in looking at that defensive core for the Maple Leafs, you know, Brody's a guy who can skate. But if you're physical on him, like we saw with the Montreal Canadiens, he'll turn pucks over. And
his partner's not going to help him much in that area either.
Well, that's
Riley's,
the thing. You know, and
Riley's not exactly a safety blanket when it comes to toughness or whatever.
I still believe, and that's what it comes back to your original comment, Brian, is like this is all a work in progress. I'd like to see what teams look like 10 to 15 games in where, you know, systems are habitual. You're not thinking about it out there. You just react. You just read and react off of it. But there's not a long runway to get this going. That's the biggest challenge.
Okay, but so if they can't figure out how to defend and get moving quicker, then all that offensive talent never gets the puck.
Right.
And so it doesn't, you know, you carve the efficiency of that, of the top six forwards, if you will. So the whole trick for me is how do they defend? How quick do they get it into the guys who are really dangerous? How quick do they get it in their hands? And if they can do that, I think they're fine. But in the meantime, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to knock some players around and move some players up and down. And, you know, maybe Lettinen gives them something that they're more comfortable with. And, you know, when he, at 26 years old, he's able to jump in and play. Well, that would be a hell of a boost. Like, what if he turns out to be a legit 4-5 guy for them? That changes everything for them.
Ray, you mentioned Freddie earlier. Like, do you think the one thing about him, and I know he's a big guy, he's regarded as one of the top goaltenders, is you've been in between the benches for a lot of games. It's just the timing of a big save. It's just like that Josh Anderson kind of backhand half breakaway goal. I didn't think that was a good goal, but it was just the timing of it. I don't know what you think, but just for him to get to that elite level, if you're up 4-0 and there's a minute left, much like Carey Price was the other day, and you give up one, people don't care, but when your team just gets you back or they get the lead and you give up that softie, it's just crushing.
Well, first of all, I don't know what the stats are. I don't have them at the top of my head here, but since he's come to Toronto, his first month, which is usually October, is terrible every year. It's never any good. And so now here he is in January, and he's off to a bit of a rocky start.
Yeah, I find that weird, though, Ray, to be honest with you. How is this the same thing every year? It's like, I don't know.
Whatever you're doing, change it.
Right.
Because it's not getting you out of the gate very good. But the big save thing, man, like, Grant Fuhr used to have that. He'd give up four goals, and they needed a big save, and he'd make this unbelievable save at the big moment, and they'd go on and win. And Freddie's just not had that. He doesn't have that reputation. And so it can always change, but I don't see where the Leafs are a better team without him in net. I think he's good.
I agree.
I guess I hear you. I'd like him to make a bigger save at an important time more often. I think that would change his narrative a lot.
Yeah, especially, you know, come playoff time, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And there's no, as I said earlier, there's no controversy in that unless Freddie makes it one. You know, it doesn't matter what Jack Campbell does. Freddie plays well. He's your guy. You have more faith in him. You should have more faith in him. But we got that going tonight. There's been a lot of action throughout the league already, but probably the craziest storyline of the weekend happened in a Zoom chat in Philly where Jake Voracek goes at a guy.
I
this was wild. Let's play it because not everyone has heard it, not everyone's seen it. This was from over the weekend. Jake Voracek, he's up there with Travis Konecny, and Konecny's just like, all right, throw it at me. I'm feeling
he
good.
He was the star of the show.
Star of the show.
He had a hat trick, yeah.
Philly, what do they take? Two in a row off pit. They're feeling good. Yeah. And some columnist in Philly posing a question to Voracek, and this is how the back and forth went.
Two games in, Jake. How different does the season feel, if at all, given the circumstances of the offseason and the condensed schedule and everything?
Doesn't matter what I say, Mike. You're going to write every time, so it doesn't matter what you say. Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we got 4 points off the first two games. I wasn't even going to answer your question because you are such a weasel. It's not even funny. Next question.
I like how he just went in and out of consciousness. He's like, you're such a weasel. Then he tried to answer it, and then at the end he just said, you're such a weasel.
Yeah, Ray, what do you make of that? Yeah. You've gone back and forth, I'm sure, at times. I don't know if it's been that, you know, heated necessarily.
Not, I mean, not public, because you've always had access, and you know, there's been guys that have, a couple in particular, that have come at me. They don't like the way that I've evaluated their game, and they've come at me, and we've had a little, hey, how you doing? Whatever, it's the way it goes. That was spectacular. In he just couldn't, like, Jake Voracek just couldn't, he couldn't walk past it. He's like, to hell with it. Like, he tried to go back there. And I don't know if you read some of the articles. I mean, this guy's been all over Voracek for quite some time. And so,
then I think he has the right to do it. If it's like, well, if this guy can write whatever he wants about me, I'm allowed to tell him off in any form that I want.
But he did I want to give context too. Apparently, because I called Frank Saravelli the next day, because Frank, you know, that's his market. That I'm like, tell me the backstory here and stuff. But apparently, Voracek put out on Twitter too, saying, I would have had this conversation with him a long time ago, because apparently this guy's been writing gutless tweets about him and stuff and writing articles for like a year and a half. But because of the pandemic, because of non-face-to-face, that's the first time this guy's had an opportunity, like Voracek, to even talk to him. So it's been like an 18-month process here, and this guy shows up on a Zoom, and Voracek can't control himself. So that was the context behind the scenes of, and he put it out there on Twitter. Apparently, Voracek said, this is why.
Well,
and
this guy Mike, I don't have his name in front of me, but he responded to continue to add to the, again, I don't know the history. I'd never heard of the guy before, but some of his tweets were blatantly sarcastic. Like, I did see some of the people were finding them. They're like, well, what about this? He's like, I know it's a joke. Obviously, they shouldn't put him on waivers. You know, like, so to be not to defend the guy, because I don't know what he's been doing, and I have no problem with Voracek not liking the guy. That's human nature. You know, that's what it was. It was a human moment where he's like, I can't listen to this guy. I don't like you. But there's probably more to it than just he hates Voracek, you know, and Voracek can't handle it. But that's the kind of stuff that's going to happen now, because you never get face to face.
Yeah, well, I mean, go ahead, Ray.
Go ahead,
I was just going to say, as a player, did you ever confront a media member, Ray?
One time, and without going too deep into it, I was on TV at the time. It was late in my career, and I made an opinion on something that was a kind of a big deal around a happening, and never heard from the reporter, but he didn't like my comments. So like a year and a half later, I'm playing in Atlanta, and he wrote something to the effect that I was trying to use my ESPN connections to get into the All-Star game, which was total bullshit.
Yeah, really.
Chat. So I got his number, and I called him at home, and you know, the first 3 minutes of the conversation didn't go very well for either of us, and then we kind of talked it out, and he explained why he was mad, and I explained why I said what I did on TV and why this all wasn't right. And we kind of like, we're like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's, and it was fine. But I think what bugs players, and you guys tell me if you disagree, please, but is we always get written about us. We have to be accountable for the way we play. We have to be accountable for our body language and they're breaking a stick, and somebody can write or say whatever they want. And when they get, when all of us in the media get chipped back on, it doesn't go so well. Like, if we want the players to be accountable, well, if we make a mistake, if we, not an opinion, opinion's opinion, but if I say, you know, look, Freddie Anderson's made, or, you know, has given up 8 goals 3 games in a row, well, I deserve to have somebody go, hey, dummy, he's only played 2 games and he gave up 4 and 3 or whatever the numbers are. Like, that, there's nothing wrong with that. But I find the media takes things, and I guess I'm part of that, really sensitively. And the players are supposed to just accept it. And so I wasn't surprised at all that, whether it's Voracek or not, I don't know him, but I wasn't surprised at all that this blew up.
No, me neither. And I think what is evident in everything you just said is that we're dealing with human beings on both sides. You know, anyone, yep. People can act as if they've got the thickest skin. It's just not possible to get there completely. You know, we can
nobody
all
nobody likes
to,
hearing it or reading it.
No,
Hazy, no matter
it's
who
tough.
You are.
You right. can accept right. it easier. You can accept it better. You know, it doesn't need to drag you down for minutes, hours, days, or whatever, like maybe it once did. But it's not easy to be criticized, to feel like you're the brunt of the joke, or that, right. you know, whatever it is, and that goes both ways. I mean, that's totally understandable.
Both sides. Like, I mean, I'm sitting here, I did get a heads up, so I got my TV on here, and I'm watching you knuckleheads, and, like, you know, O has the courage to wear that whatever he's wearing over his shoulder.
The poncho. There.
Like, the poncho. Like, I'm not even sure.
I had no choice. It's my wife's. It's my wife's.
I'm sure it looks much better on her. I know it does.
It actually does look nice.
It really looks good on you. I'm saying. By the way, you guys brought up El Guapo earlier.
Yeah.
One of the great. I don't need no stinking sweater. I don't need no sweater.
It's so good. Oh, it's such a good movie. I have to watch it again probably tonight at some point.
Oh, you got to pick up a little El Guapo. You have to.
Yeah. Just a little. Bit.
You should see the nonsense. Like, I had one of my good friends offer me his luchador mask, and I'm just like, it's like, I'm a professional broadcaster. I don't know if I need the luchador mask.
That, like, would be awesome.
It would be playing the part. I want to see the wardrobe change day in, day out. Like, what are you putting together tomorrow? Is it a garbage bag? You know, do you stick with the shawls? Like, where do you take this? Because you've got real opportunity here. You got a runway. Yeah. And I think you need to own it. And
dude, where am I going to go from here, you idiot?
Well, you're not going to wear that every day, are you?
I think.
Why not? Why not? I don't know. I'm just not going to create a theme where it's like tomorrow I'm going to be some kind of circus event. And it's like you can get your jollies like you did today. This guy, Ray, couldn't stop laughing for 10 minutes. he wanted me to have a piece of toast and some corn on the cob.
Like, okay, nacho
somebody
libre.
Somebody just texted me and said, you look like the bird lady in Home Alone.
We can get pigeons to your house for the show tomorrow. That's your theme tomorrow. You're the pigeon lady in Home Alone 2.
Yeah, the bird lady.
And that's, I think, perfect. I think it's perfect. And you throw your seeds right before the end of the show. You say, Kevin, run. And curtains.
Kevin, run.
I think
that's not
happening. Okay.
That is so funny.
We'll work on it. We've got a lot of options here. Anyway, Ray, we'll leave it there. We'll see what happens tonight. And we'll break it down tomorrow at 5:05.
Yeah, awesome, guys. Have a good day.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. You can check out the website, mapletoyota.com, and the showroom remains open by appointment only. Or you can buy and shop online at mapletoyota.com and receive rates from 0%.